Let's do it.
All righty, here we go. It's Matt Chatham. This is Real Thing Patriots Podcast. I know I'm supposed to have a sad voice. Price is Right sound. But I'm not going to. It's the bye week. Still plenty of reasons to have good energy. This isn't meant to be a sad clown show where I just complain all the way through. There's no hiding the fact that it was very, very clearly an ugly performance, gross performance out there in Nashville that the Patriots had. They get knocked around by the Titans. But the fun part for me, and maybe this makes me a sadist, I don't know, but when you go back through the tape, you kind of understand how it happened, why it happened. You can clearly see ways to prevent that from happening. Sometimes it was hard to communicate, but hopefully that's why you listen to this particular show, because I break it down a little bit for you here. Each of the elements that suck, why they suck, how do you prevent yourself from doing that? Are they capable of preventing themselves from doing what they were doing on that day? Was it just a dog of a performance that's somehow inexplicable and very disappointing? Because yeah, for those of you, I know I've got several friends who went out and did that trip. Nashville is one of the ones they circled in the offseason when they saw it pop up as a schedule possibility. Nashville's a fun town to travel to. You spend all that money, and then they lay it out on the field that way. And yeah, that's disappointing. And even beyond that, you're a Patriots fan. You've hopefully, if you're an astute Patriots fan who's been paying attention all these years, they for whatever reason have had this pattern lately of up and down, sometimes gross, sometimes good, but up and down September's, that's kind of been a thing. And then there's been the in-season stinker that just doesn't make a ton of sense. And this seems to be that. I mean, obviously you spend all off-season preparing for the year, building your roster up, and you hope that neither of those two things happen. But again, this year, you've got both those elements. Now, there's still plenty of games to go. There could be potentially another stinker, but I hope you listen to the show because you want to hear something real. This isn't jump off the Tobin kind of stuff. This isn't sky is falling podcast. It's real. It's the nuts and bolts, what happened, what didn't happen. No big sweeping statements about things. And I do want to dig into a little bit about correlation between things you see in regular season and how they pop up later. And that's not just a Patriots point. I was kind of making fun of this on Twitter on Monday morning, just the idea that there's this really phony notion, this fallacy. A lot of columns get written about it. A lot of people speak out segments about it who will talk about something they saw in this game in October, at this point in November, or this streak of games prior to Thanksgiving, or these two or three things happened in December, and it told me what they would or wouldn't be able to do in January. Well, that's stupid, because there's so much history out there for things that have gone well for teams that have won Super Bowls where there is no direct line to that performance being reflected somehow earlier in a regular season. It's just not how NFL football works. I know people buy into that idea because there's a couple anecdotes that go with the Patriots, like the Broncos loss on the road in the AFC Championship game a few years ago, whatever that was. And if you'd only done this, and we knew that they couldn't win there because they couldn't win on the road, well, look into it. Your offensive line was an absolute shambles. That was way much more to do with why you lost on that day and the way they performed in those circumstances other than the building you were in. So, again, don't do that. Don't be that fan. I'm trying to positively encourage you here that there is no reason to believe those feelings. There's no reason to believe that, oh, man, what I saw in Tennessee, that's now who I know they are. There's so many examples, and we're going to run through them here at the end of the show, of other organizations, the Patriots also included in that, where the stuff that's supposedly signs of something don't match up with the playoff performance. So you got to set those two things apart. NFL regular season about positioning to go to where you want to play. And we'll talk about playoff win percentages and home percentages later, because I don't think that's what people really seem to have the impression that they are either. So sometimes you extrapolate sort of your own experiences on one or two or three experiences and make it into the whole history of everything, and it's just not how it works. But we'll get into that. I think it's important to understand, to help you take a deep breath and say, well, that sucked. There's no getting away from that. You can be real honest and look right at that. That's not good. Here's why that's not good. And we'll walk through each of that. But because those things aren't good and that did factually happen, it don't mean shit relative to what may or may not happen in January. And we'll get to why that is what it is. So let's dive into just the particulars, as I said. And I think this is kind of helpful to sort of connect the bad ones to one another and show the good ones that they've had this season and why they were good, because you had the absence of some of these things we're going to talk through. Now, I'm as big of an advocate out there as there is in the NFL, and it's not just Patriots related. It's really anything in this NFL relative to have and run production. Have and run production as part of your offense doesn't have to be the staple, doesn't have to be the only thing you have. Clearly not the only thing you have. That's not today's NFL. But you have to have it. You can't be completely bereft of the ability to stop the run, to run the ball, and then also on the other side stop it, or you have no chance, right? And that really, 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 as much as anything we could talk about, is the thread to pull out of this on any really of the bad Patriots performances this year. And again, my major point here is not that this is a Patriots thing. It's an NFL thing. You look around the NFL, and for those people who are trying to hot take on Tom Brady today and where he's at and how things are going for him, look at the other really positive NFL performances from quarterbacks this year. Look at where some of those best guys stand. And I'll tell you, there's one element that surrounds them, and that's what really makes it go, because it's still football. Look to Patrick Mahomes. Why does that goofy, you know, misdirection, super shot play, dynamic tight end stuff work? Because there's a running game that backs it. Hunt is there, and he's explosive. He wins out of the backfield. He wins in traditional run. They've got a solid offensive line. You eliminate that. You basically take it so that nobody on the other side of the ball is concerned about the Chiefs running game, and that thing don't work anywhere nearly as well as it does. That's factual. I mean, it's hard to explain that on a podcast other than to simply, you know, it works much better in video, let's put it that way. I can sit and show and say, hey, here's the defense's reaction because they are heavily considering the potential of a run. They need to stop these runs from being four and fives, and those reactions cause the lane availability in passing game. And again, this is not a Chiefs point exclusively. Let's look at everyone else. Drew Brees still playing at a high level. Look at how good the Saints look now. What is the common denominator with those guys relative to these other successful guys? Look at the running game with Ingram and fantasy football guy should know this one. Terrible of me to not know the name, but the other back. And I'm going to come up with it here as I keep talking. But basically understanding that what goes on with the Saints, the real success that they've had throughout this season is because they're actually kind of a run team first. You know, there's been those games where they've been successful with Brees, and he hasn't lit it up. His stat line will actually be relatively muted. You guys knew I was talking about Alvin Kamara. You called me out on that for not knowing immediately. I appreciate that. But Alvin Kamara, but him and Ingram. But the point is, that is a team that is built around those guys first. You take out the dynamic element there. You take out the threat of those guys down in, down out. The passing game ain't nearly as explosive. It's not nearly as big of a threat. Teams would defend them entirely differently. And again, I'll try to do this quickly, but go down the list. Do the rest of them in your own head. Where would the Pittsburgh Steelers offense be without John Connor playing how he is? And it's not just, awesome offensive line. Anyone's going to run through that hole. Watch John Connor's highlights. He makes people miss. You know, the offensive line gets you to the line, through the line, maybe to the and the best case scenario is they create that initial hole, and then he's 3 yards on the other side of the line of scrimmage. But then from there, it's him versus the linebackers or safety tacklers in space. He makes people miss. He's really good. They have a very strong offense or run game thus far at this point of the year. I mean, it wasn't always the case. They had some stats in that regard earlier, but I think part of it was building to where now they have a really, really nice complementary product. Again, why is that there? Not just because Ben's flinging around the zone. Around the field. Go look to Aaron Rodgers. Couldn't run the football against the Patriots. And the Patriots have the nice victory against them. The very next week, they bring out against the Dolphins Aaron Jones, and he has a huge game on the ground. All of a sudden, everything is sunny in Green Bay again. They look like an entirely different team. This same theme applies to you. One last final example here, the LA Rams. The LA Rams, again, it's so great to see this high-flying passing offense. You can dry hump the box score all you want, but if you take away the threat of Todd Gurley on a down-in, down-out basis as a runner and even as a pass catcher out of the backfield, the way the rest of it's accounted for is entirely different. It changes the formula. You got to have A before you can have B. And then when you try to stack up all these passers standings or stats against one another, it isn't just because each of the guys dropped back on each of the same identical situations and one threw better than the other. It's because the circumstances around it helped them have a better and/or helped them have a better disguise, helped them have a better opportunity to keep defenses on their heels. Patriots, when they don't run the football, just like any team in the league, when they don't run the football, teams don't have to guess. They just simply sit back. They don't they don't have to pack the box. They can overplay the coverages. They're not on their heels. They're just balanced, and they're sitting back, chilling, not worrying about flying forward to stop you from getting 4 and 5 yard runs. That's really the tie that binds the struggles the Patriots have had in those three losses this season. Inability to run the football. Couldn't run it at all against the Jags. Couldn't run it at all against the Lions. Couldn't run it at all, albeit for one drive, against the Titans on Sunday. And really their one most effective drive, the one touchdown drive they had of the game, three nice runs from Sony Michel. And they were either not committed enough to it at other parts in the game, they were too predictable in the moments where they did it, or they just simply didn't do it at other junctures in this game. And I think that's sort of the forest through the trees kind of thing. You need that part. Not because it's some, you know, deficit or some issue that the Patriots offense have that they somehow need it more. All teams need that. So it makes it very difficult to fairly evaluate if Tom Brady is the same guy and all those kinds of conversations. If you take away one major element, you take away a running game, and you have a little bit of the chaos that they had going on yesterday with their offensive line, and anyone's going to look poor. You know, you need the and/or element. I always say that phrase, and/or element. It just means that if you're a linebacker there, you're not keying on one of the other things. You're sitting more flat-footed and guessing. Is this going to be run? Is it going to be a pass? You have to play my keys. There were too many times. You go back and watch the film of the Patriots. They're just bailing into coverage. They know it's not run. And when it was run, they knew it was run, and they were piling into the line. So I just put that point out there to kind of spell out and sort of set the table what's going on around the league as well as just with the Patriots. And when you see them struggle, they're not doing it in a vacuum. There are other factors that lead to pass problems. There are other factors that lead to offensive struggles overall. And there's other problems here that we get into defensively and special teams that don't help you one bit either. So let's go down and through that list. As this game started, you know, I mocked the Green Bay a little bit last week for jumping off on this show, for jumping off sides on the kickoff, being off sides in the opening kickoff. I think much the same way the Patriots should be mocked a bit here for the way they started the game. You go on the road, you have an opportunity to go out there and start fast, and really the Patriots have started fast in the previous 2 weeks. Started fast with a great opening drives against the Bills and the Packers. So this was an opportunity to go out. You know, the other team's on a short week. You've traveled. You're rested other than the travel portion of it. Start out so quickly, but you give up a 58-yard kick return, and that's been a killer. So the Patriots had the bad one against the Chiefs, the old 97-yarder that people love to cite as if that 97-yarder happened in every single Patriots game this year. It didn't. It was in the Chiefs game. Then there were several weeks where they had tuned up the kick coverage. The kick coverage is very good. No more issues, not a thing to talk about anymore, and then it pops back in. And that doesn't mean, and there's some Twitter person, I know there's a lot of crazies out there, so I don't want to make everyone in that same umbrella, but I have a bad habit of engaging on some of these things when it's ludicrous. But it hasn't been, the kickoff coverage hasn't been an issue all season long. It's popped up at wrong times, and it's popped up at inopportune times, and it has been inconsistent, we can say that. But as bad as it was in that Chiefs game, it was awful good since that point. But then to have it recur now as you head onto a road game right as you start the damn thing, that's terrible. You can't have that. You've pretty much handicapped the start of that performance for the other side. So now defensively, they come on the field, and this is really what you can't have. And so, you know, when I'm handicapping this game, and as a sidebar, maybe I pat my own back and try not to rip out my shoulder here, but on the Patriots, we do the Nesson pregame chat, which hopefully you guys have been checking out. It's streamed on Nesson.com and then also on their Facebook page, if that's more how you consume content these days in a weird world of streaming devices and all those kinds of things. But we cover that show. We always finish that show up with me doing picks. And I'm not just a pick the Patriots to win guy every time. I want to make sure I'm giving people advice on what to pick that'll actually help them win some money. 8-2 on the season, and that's not picking the Patriots to win every time. It's sometimes picking them with a spread, and many times just picking the right side of points. So again, yesterday went with the under. So hopefully if you guys are following that show and following that advice and you wager a bit, that you've done okay. So we're 8-2 out in front of that. And I think in part one of the things that when I'm – one of the uncertainties, the reticence I guess I had with yesterday's game was going into it, not really understanding or not really having a lot of confidence in how the offense would perform. Because Trent Brown being gone all week with an illness, and then, hey, he went ahead and made the trip, and they're just going to throw him in uniform and hope he plays well, that's tough to do if you've been sick, especially when you're a guy that big on an offense that sometimes likes to go hurry up. That was a little bit concerning. I mean, it actually happened in-game where they had to substitute him out. He just was dragging. And, you know, I think sometimes we don't understand or fully appreciate what professional athletes are going through. You know, just because you see that same number on that same jersey, or the same number on the same jersey on the same body that you're used to seeing, doesn't mean he's the same guy as the week before. If he's been going through something, it's a big deal that, oh yeah, you're fine. Just, you didn't miss practice, but hey, you're dressed again and you're the same person. Go play the same. It doesn't always happen that way. And I think it was a down week for him, and understandably so when you're sick with something that's, it's kind of one of the little secrets in the NFL. We don't talk about it much. I mean, it doesn't go in the injury report, but these bombs tend to hit locker rooms each year, and you just try to survive them. Hope it doesn't affect too many people. I believe Matthew Slater got hit with it a little bit this week as well. So you kind of try to struggle through, but man, you know, hydration and not being queasy and having your energy levels up and feeling strong and being able to do all your workouts during the week that helps you recover and get back from the problems you have. When you skip that step and just throw yourself out into an NFL game, yeah, expectations should be low. So we did this a little bit earlier in the year when, you know, Patrick Chung and Trey Flowers were gone, and oh, they're gone, no big deal, they'll be fine. Everyone will pick up the slack. Well, it was a down, big time down performance there against the Lions. I think there was a little bit of that going on here, at least, and I probably contributed to it with the Patriots offense. That, oh, you know, they probably won't play Gronk, no big deal, let them get through the bye, they'll be fine on the other side. Oh, you know, hey, oh, James White twisted his ankle last week's game, he's able to finish the thing, he'll be fine this week. But hey, he stayed on the report all week and didn't have anywhere near the impact that he usually has this week. I don't know if it's still bothering him or not, but then you got a left tackle that's in and out of the game, then you got a right tackle and Cannon that's in and out of the game. You're down your right guard, although Ted Garris has done a nice job filling in, but it's, you know, it's still not the same. There's just sort of it all worked itself out feeling to this, and when you throw in that many variables and they're not all where they should be, yeah, shit doesn't always go well in the NFL. It's kind of how it works. We shouldn't be surprised by that. But that's why I felt better about the under, and hopefully at least followed that advice, because the under did hit just on its head, how I think we thought we'd get there. But now heading through this thing, again, we mentioned the 58-yard kick return to start. That's terrible. You can't have that. Clearly you got to be tight on that right to start off the game. It's a really poor way to start. But then, again, if you're gambling on this game, and this is kind of the greater point I was getting to, if you're gambling on this game, you're trying to, even without money involved, just simply guessing who's going to win or advocating for your team, if you were to know that these elements were going to be in the game, it completely changes your point of view on what may or may not happen. And that would be, yeah, the special teams playing like doo-doo again, going on the road and having three punt returns that go for significant numbers, all three returns over 10 yards, like a 12 and a couple 14s, I believe it was. Then you also have the 58-yard kick return. You throw that in, that's four different instances where you're giving away field position that's not typically something that's done. So that's, you throw that in and say, well, okay, pause button here for a second. How is this game going to go down then if you handicap yourself that much in ways you typically don't? And then add in this element. Oh, Corey Davis, their top wide receiver, and what's relatively a weak passing offense, is going to go off. And he's going to be guarded by Stephon Gilmore, who's been shutting down guys all year, been playing at an all-pro level. Oh, well, that's not part of the normal prognostication here. That's not part of the guess. That's not part of the assumption, the knowns, this should happen, this should happen, this should happen on probability sake, and then here's the thing I don't know, and here's the guess. Well, you throw that little wrench into the whole thing. Oh, they're going to have a hard time covering Corey Davis, like a really hard time. He's going to make multiple big-time plays against the Patriots' best defender. Ooh, okay, well, that changes things dramatically. Now, you're going to have to change your coverages. Safety locations might be different. You might have to double when you don't normally double. That can change where your run fits are and how much you can commit to that. That screws things up. Oh, special teams a problem. Not able to cover their top guy in a team where passing offense isn't really usually your concern. Ugh, that changes things. And then here's a third one. Ooh, they're going to struggle covering the tight end. Jonnu Smith is going to have multiple big-time plays in the game, touchdown as well. Didn't see that coming. And you know, arguably, how could one? Patrick Chung's great against tight ends typically. This hasn't been a particularly productive guy. He's athletic. He's had some shovel pass touchdowns. He's made some plays, but he's not a highly productive guy. He's not a guy they turn to very often. And that's, it's a one-on-one you'd expect to win more often than not. Maybe he catches a few balls, but not a major factor in the game. But he was. So it's like, okay, shoot, special teams kicks is terrible relative to their normal high standard. You can't cover their top wide receiver at the level you normally do. Their tight end becomes a part of the game, and offensively they can't run the football. Well, you introduce on all those things and, you know, throw up the flags. This is an entirely different situation now. Now you got a major problem, especially since this is all happening on the road. So that's the real story of the game. You throw in a bunch of stuff that's not normally there, and then you introduce it into, you know, a stew that just quickly changes when it's now part of something that shouldn't have been there. And I think that's how you understand the Patriots. When those things aren't there, well, there's plenty of talented personnel. There's plenty of ways to now attack another team. When you introduce all of those things, you've got problems. And quite frankly, again, that's going to be the issue with most teams. You can't you throw in a few different things into the stew, and it's poison, and you're going to have problems. You've dug yourself too big of a hole, too much to come out of, or you're going to be in reactionary mode on every single thing that's usually a given for you. Can't have that, and that's really what happened here. So I'm going to dive into this thing here, specifically on a few different things that just happened, and we'll just sort of machine gun our way through the initial series. A few things here that happened that sort of set the table for how you can't do it. You know, we just mentioned all those other things that come into play, but then you're going to go against Vrabel's team. Mike Vrabel's the head coach. He's had his swing at you as a Houston Texans guy. It's no secret how you attack the middle of the pocket goes many, many miles towards how you're going to do against Tom Brady. If you're going to work it up in the middle, if you're going to keep him uncomfortable, if you're going to keep him flinching, you know, because he feels stuff in his lap, he feels stuff all around him, he's just, the room is too crazy around him, he's uncomfortable. And if you don't have a running game to back people off, he's going to stay uncomfortable. So knowing that is kind of the thing you're heading into in this game, it's pretty bizarre to me to see the Patriots come out on their very first series to start the game offensively. So the Titans have gone down and done their thing. They score quickly. And the Patriots have 6 passes on their opening drive. No runs. To me, that's, and again, this is not to just go hard at Josh McDaniels. You know, I love Josh. Josh is one of the best in the business at what he does. But I really felt like that was a major tactical error. Now, I don't know if that's coming from Coach Belichick or it's driven by Josh or these are all audibles by Tom. I don't think that was the case. But I'm not sure exactly who to pin that on, but I just think tactically, if they were to go back and look at themselves, they're saying, that's not what we want to do. Why is that not what we want to do? Well, because that plays into the hand of Mike Vrabel. Vrabes wants to go after you in the middle of the pocket. Well, and he can't do that if you're not passing it, right? If you go out and throw it 6 times in a row, he gets to get right into his defensive script about how we can attack this thing. It's very difficult to do that if you're only maybe getting a passing opportunity on every third play, or now it's every other, now it's every third again, or maybe now it's every fourth. But the mixing and matching, when you don't give him the mix and matching, we just sit back and throw. Wow, well, he's going to come at you, and he's going to mix it up himself. So I thought that was a really bizarre way to approach them early that kind of got themselves in a hole. The only real big offensive play through the year to start this thing off was the Gordon shot play, and that kind of saves that opening drive and ends up making it into a 52-yard field goal. Gostkowski makes the big one there to start it off. But in the absence of that big, big downfield throw, the intermediate and shorter stuff wasn't there. It wasn't great. So I think that really kind of poisons a little bit the ability to start fast because of the chosen approach. Now, you know, he could counter with me or anyone who was responsible for that. Hey, if we had completed them all, we'd be fine. But I just feel like it opened up the door for Vrabes to introduce the confusion element himself. You can't allow him to do that if you're running down his throat. So that to me, I thought was tactically off. Now, you go back here to the Titans' offense. Now, they've got their second swing here. And this is where it's really I should have done this a little bit more on the very first drive that the Titans had the ball. We know they go down the field and score. But it's a 58-yard kick return. It's Corey Davis for 24. We kind of touched on that with the Gilmore stuff. Deion Lewis for 5, 4, and 3. Tight end Jonnu Smith, he gets the touchdown. And so the point there is that those beyond just the kick return, beyond just the Corey Davis thing, beyond the tight end issue, Deion's runs were 5, they were 4, and they were 3. You need those to be 3, then 2, then 1, right? 5 doesn't sound like much, doesn't sound like a big deal, but when play action is such a big part of the other side's offensive approach, 5's way too much. 5 on first downs, way too much. It's twice what you want to give up. 4, again, twice what you want to give up. 3 is okay, but by that point, you're running to get first downs. You're running straight through the sequences. The Patriots' inability, albeit off of a really bad kick return to start things, but getting gashed up the middle, too much push, tackles were moving backwards. It was not a good set a wall kind of situation for the Patriots. That was disappointing. So now the reason I went back to that quickly before we go into the next Patriots defensive series is because it was even worse on this one. The Patriots' second defensive series, Lewis for 12, Lewis for 11, 16-yard pass to Davis, Derrick Henry for 10, and then a 23-yarder to Davis for a touchdown. That second Titans series was so much wrong with how you want to approach them. You just cannot have it that way. If you're not going to be able to stop the run against these kind of big teams that want to sort of be physical with you, you don't have a chance. So Jacksonville was much that way. Detroit's not really that way by reputation, but they played that way on that day. And this was another one of those. If you're going to tell me that the Patriots defense is going to struggle to get stops in the running game, that they're going to give up 12s and 11s and repeatedly 5s, well, that's a huge problem. Running game has to be 2 or 3 or less yards each and every time. The occasional one will break. That's just professional football. But if you're giving them up early like that in chunks, it just sets the table for all the other stuff to become so much easier for an offense. And that was the issue today. Now, the Patriots have had some other running groups that come through where they've had opportunities where teams that ran the football just as well as Tennessee does coming in, and they stopped those. So it's not as if this is always beating them. They've had other opportunities against other teams where they also do this well, and the Patriots stopped it. So it's more to me not a matter of what they can or can't do. It's the frustrating inconsistency. If you could consistently say that they defend the run and then they are somewhat inconsistent on how they stop the passing game, that's a different story. If you come into a game and you've been pretty strong and solid on stopping the run game from being a big, big factor in a game, and all of a sudden they just walk through you, you don't get into all the other elements. So moving forward here, the Patriots offense comes back now. And remember, I believe we're here into 14-3 for the score. Patriots offense is up. Incomplete pass to start things off. So, you know, again, you miss on the table setter right off the thing as a drive starter. Then you do a 2-yard run to Michelle, and then Brady sacked on 3rd and 8. And so, again, this is the Patriots' second offensive series. They hadn't yet run the football until, I believe this is the 8th play. So the 8th play of the game, they're going to do their very first run. And what really caught my eye, and this is maybe more the former player thing, but it was they flipped out the personnel group to run Michelle in on the field. It's not as if the incompletion on first down happened with a run-type group out, and they go a different direction than you expect, and they throw it, it's incomplete, and they keep Michelle on the field, and maybe they shift in motion and then run and only get 2. It was actually a substitution out, bring Michelle in, no movement pre-snap, and then he's tackled for 2. So I'm thinking, okay, you finally go to run game, and it's real obvious that it would be an upset if it weren't run. Let's put it that way. You run Michelle on the field, you set up into a very run-looking set, don't move anyone, and then run right in the line. Well, yeah, they stuffed you. It ends up only being a 2-yard run. So you're incomplete on first down, more of a downfield thing, and now you're 3rd and 8. So basically, you're sitting here in Mike Vrabel's hands. You know, this is where Mike wants you. 3rd and 8, thank God. You know, you didn't make us guess. You didn't keep us on our heels on the first 2 downs. We kind of got bailed out a little bit with the stuff we got, and now we're sitting here with 3rd and 8. Now I can attack you and go crazy at you and how and who I bring and where I bring them, get Tom uncomfortable, and he sacked. He sacked on 3rd and 8. So now you're in a backed-up punt situation with the Patriots, and the backed-up punt ends up being a 13-yard punt return. And again, now that's going to start at the New England 49. So it's actually a big ball by Ryan Allen, but you know, you backed up punt, you go 3 and out, you punt it real well, but then they've 13-yard returns. Can't have them. You know, the returns need to be under 5 yards. They need to be maybe, you know, he on the catch, he falls forward a few, but you can't break that first one and get, you know, more than a first down with a run back. Now the Patriots, special teams, is really sort of hurting them a little bit. You know, that's essentially giving back a first down through your coverage. This series starts again in Patriots territory. 29-yard pass right off the bat to Jonnu Smith. I think that was a big tight end play there early. 5-yarder to Henry, then a zero, and then they kick a field goal. Now it's 17-3. So it had been 14-3, now it's 17-3. So they do hold there a little bit, but it's that 29-yard shot pass to a tight end, or big pass crosser that goes for a running kind of situation there with Smith that ends up, you know, being the chunk that gets him into field goal range. So again, an outlier, a thing you don't expect. The big play to a tight end that you should be winning that matchup, but weren't. Usually Chung does. Now, this is sort of the more, bit of a key breaker for me on the day as far as how things did go down, because I wouldn't have remembered this way that the Patriots actually had sort of a gutsy drive here, because it's gone really poorly for two. They're down 17-3, bad situation. This doesn't really fit the theme of, hey, you hit them, you be physical with them, you get them down, they fold, and fold. It was 17-3. They actually came back here, and then the 17-10 thing holds for several series after that, which is not how I remembered it until I went back and watched it. I know a lot of the narratives flying around the team today is how they got down and they just got stepped on. They actually fought back and held it in fight-back mode for a long time, but the offense just couldn't do anything, and then eventually you're blent, and then got stepped on and smashed. But there was this sort of middle segment that is a bit of a breaker. And again, this is why I talk about the importance of the running game. This is where it was. The running game existed on the one drive the Patriots scored on. And that matters. There's going to be perfect correlation there. Michelle had runs of 7, 5, and 3. How's that marry up? Really well with the ones we talked about. Deion Lewis is on their successful drive to start things off. Similar there, you know. So Gordon gets hit for an in cut for 14, and there's two big ones on that drive to Edelman. James White has a short one, and there's a flat route to James. Ends up being a nice play. I believe that went for about 11. And then Devlin runs it in. So what that was in the one Patriots drive series was variety. And variety is where this team is strongest. And it's not just variety on who gets thrown to. It's variety in and out of the run plays, in and out of the pre-snap movements, in and out of the packages, in and out of who's being targeted. That's when they're at their best. When it's drop back and send the ball to Gordon multiple times, sort of independent of whether or not he's open, or just not running at all and dropping back and having Tom just get sort of ravaged by defense that comes after them because they're not concerned about run, not as good. In this situation, pretty good. That's how you want your Patriots to look. They're able to do it. They're capable of doing it. They just didn't replicate it enough on this day. The running game existed in this game for the Patriots in Nashville, essentially on that drive. That was about it, which should be one of the biggest frustrations that comes out of this thing. Now, oddly enough, they get this thing to 17-10, and this is the portion of the game that didn't fit the script to my recollections. And if you know listening to any of the, or listening or reading any of the things here on Monday, this is kind of the part that gets forgotten. The Patriots actually come back and force the Titans to punt. They go and finally get a score, get it to 17-10, and if recollection served better, I would have thought, oh, well, not better, but if it would have gone the way I think it follows the narrative, you'd say, oh, well, then of course the Patriots get scored on again here, and then they just accelerate through the to the other side. But that's not what happened. They actually forced the Titans to punt right there. That doesn't fit the script. And then the Pats, comes back, drives a bit, but then misses a field goal. So it remains 17-10. Big drive starter there for Jules on that one, 30-yarder. Michelle then only for one. And then this is one that gets frustrating to me. So if you have a drive starter for 30, things are rolling, you attempt to run the ball on first down. Now you get 2nd and 9, right? You only get 1 yard, so it's not a good play. Okay, that's fine. This is really a team that needs to be in get back on track mode, in my view. You don't want to put Tom, your 41-year-old quarterback, back there getting chomped on in 3rd and longs. You don't want to live the season in 3rd and long with Brady. But they took a shot play on 2nd down. And a shot play to Gordon. And we know how high he was targeted in this game, and the low completion rate, you know, ends up being 3 of 9 or 3 of 12 or something like that, 4 of 12, whatever it was. But he was targeted a lot, and they completed few to him. And I don't like the get back. Now, get back and track in the NFL basically means you're 2nd and uncomfortably long. Could be 2nd and 10, 2nd and 11, 2nd and 9, whatever it was. But you're trying to get it back down to 3rd and inside 5. You know, 3rd and something that's really comfortable for any offense to keep you on your unbalanced as a defense. Well, incompletions, shot plays on 2nd and long, that doesn't get you back on track. That makes it 3rd and long. 3rd and 9, that's bad news. And then Brady gets sacked. But they get a little bit lucky there because they're able to, the Titans were offside, so it resets it again. Instead of being a 3rd and 9 sack and off the field, they get another shot at 3rd and 4, and then they throw the short incompletion to White, and they're done. With that series, they miss the 52-yarder. So that is how that thing ends. And now we're still, but again, we're still sitting here at 17 to 10. And the Titans own was then forced to punt again. It's like, oh, okay, never mind. So after the Patriots had scored, the Patriots defense actually forced two punts in a row. Not how I would have remembered it, but it's instructive to not just stick with your feelings on a game. It's helpful to kind of go back and look. But then here's where it starts to suck. Patriots O goes three and out. So at some point, a defense is going to relent. They can't go out there time after time after time after again. If you're not given back some field position or at least given some time, or you know, even more importantly, it would be great to get points. But you don't get that, but you also don't get any drive time. So the Patriots have stopped them twice in a row. Then the Patriots O goes out and gets a three and out. It's Michelle for four. Okay. And then a short incompletion to Gordon. And then now you're back into third and six. And they went back to Gordon for a deep right incompletion. So, man, those are frustrating. It's like you get four on first down. Okay, that's a positive drive start. And then you push it back to Josh twice in a row. And more importantly, it's these low percentage things. It's a deep throw on third and six to Gordon that ends up being incomplete. Deep right down the field. And those are tough because, you know, the deep passes are the low percentage stuff. And it's awesome to have Josh Gordon on the team. He's a big weapon. But I don't think he's a gotta-have-it-on-third-down guy necessarily unless, you know, and just coverage dictates and he opens up. I don't love the idea of shot plays to get back on track. I don't love the idea of shot plays, down the field, deep plays on third and medium. Third and medium is something you've earned your way into, at least with a decent play prior to that. This Patriots team is always about working Jules, working Hogan, working James White, working the intermediate guys who are just uncoverable if you just give them a little window and some time, as opposed to just play after play turning and chucking it to Josh, to the downfield threat guy. It's just too low percentage. This has been a high percentage offense for so many years. Some people make fun of that dink and dunk and all that shit, but it works really, really well. I don't like seeing them fall back into low percentage world because they're not as good of no offense is good if they live in low percentage world. I think there are too many other options here in this offense of ways to go, from some Patterson screens that didn't get used to some, you know, catch and run with Dorsett or any of these guys. That stuff to me is a better chance to get 6 yards than a shot play to Josh Gordon. It's just, you know, it's great to have to lull them to sleep and then hit Gordon with some stuff. And he can still end up with the same amount of yards, but I don't know if turning to him time after time after time again is, you know, in got to have it situations is where you want to be. I'd rather him be this awesome, amazing complimentary weapon as opposed to the what feels like your first and second, the guy you're sort of pressing to get the ball to. So hopefully they use the bye week to get out of that mode because I think they've sort of fallen into a rut where they're looking there maybe a little too much. Now, let's see. Da-da-da-da-da. Now, like as I mentioned, the Patriots go three and out. They have to punt. And now the Patriots, again, this is sort of where the punt return was letting them down. Again, it's a 12-yarder, comes back their way, and gets him back. And there's also a 5-yard penalty here for an ineligible man downfield. So, the Patriots offense does nothing. They go three and out. It's a backed-up punt, and the punt's kicked well. But a 12-yard return on the end of it again, and with a 5-yard penalty. Now you've got a drive start of the 37 freaking yard line. So, hey, good luck, Patriots defense. So, again, the perception breaker there was how many times they held the Titans defense after the Patriots got them back their first, you know, got their first touchdown on the board, got it to 7-10, held them several times, but the offense failed over and over and over again, and defensively, here we go. 8-play drive, there's actually a Patriots sack in there, surprisingly, a sack that isn't rewarded because they get back with a 3rd and 14 play, a completion to Davis. So 3rd and 14 completion to Davis for 20 yards. Ends up being sort of the drive breaker. They go on. It's an 8-play drive. Ends up in a touchdown. Now it's 24-10. Now you're into halftime. So the dam eventually broke. It did. Patriots started out really poorly defensively, but there was a middle segment there after those first two drives where they held up really, really well. And then they even get them into a negative situation, 3rd and 14. But they give it up a way that they haven't much this year, and that's with their top guy getting a one-on-one completion against the Patriots' top the pass defender. So outlier city there, and you can't win if you're just giving up out too many outliers. Halftime, down 24-10 are the Patriots, and you really get into the second half here, and I'm not going to do play-by-play from that, but we'll just kind of go into the greater points from there. But in the second half, you may be surprised to see this. I was certainly surprised as I'm taking notes and going back through the second half. They start punt, field goal, punt. So the Patriots defense actually held up. You know, they was 3 points in three drives, a total of 3 points in three drives. That's actually doing the best you can possibly expect to keep you in a game when you're down 14, especially when you have Tom Brady and all the talent they have on that offense. But I think where the seams started to come apart here for the Patriots offensively in the second half, it was when the offensive line rotation was a really hot mess. Cannon goes out. Trent Brown's having his issues with sort of coming back from the illness. They're rotating around. LaDainian Wilde ended up playing left, ended up playing right. Dwayne Allen goes out injured, and this isn't a game where Gronk is gone, so you have really no way of blocking your edges in a manner that's going to be comfortable, right? You can't trust that it's there each down. And now the offense is pretty seriously handicapped. So you get to that point, there's the injury issues, there's the absence of some of your main weapons, you've not established run game at all earlier, and now you're in enough of a hole where you can't go get 4 yard runs now. Now you're pressed into a situation you never would have or should have or could have wanted to be in against this particular defense. And Vrabes, who's rolling pairs time after time after time again here, really called a nice game. So this is I mentioned that the Patriots held the Titans to punt, field goal, punt in the second half to start it out. But here's the complimentary part that was absence. The Patriots' offense, in the context of all those crazy things that was going on with the offensive line and the absence of a run game, they open with 3 punts and then a turnover on downs. So the Patriots' second half was non-existent. You didn't get the adjustment drive we always see, they came back, they fixed their thing, they got at least one more 7-point drive out of it. That didn't exist in this game. It was 3 punts and a turnover on downs. So the first 4 drives back, there was no adjustment, no functional adjustment that ended up in something that they wanted. So, you know, that's just too much stress on this particular defense. It's not a top defense as far as statistically speaking and, you know, talent level and all that kind of stuff, but it can be a very good defense. I think they've proven that. But it's not a defense that you can leave out there for drive after drive after drive in a row without some sort of complementary portion to it. It's, you know, there are a few defenses in the NFL, especially the way the NFL is these days, that can survive that. I think we look to the Buffalo Bills as an example. I mean, no, it's an extreme example because their offense is such a hot mess. But the Buffalo Bills defense, when they're pretty decent when you give them something, you know, back on the other side. When you don't, that group that was really high and flying statistically early in the year, then that dam breaks for them as well. It's a pretty good parallel with those guys. So now going here, and you know how this thing finishes, they basically did get their neck stepped on late. You know, it then they end up pulling Brady, which I think was a smart move. Just this is sort of a it didn't go well today kind of day. We did way too many things wrong. We didn't handle the adversity correctly. We had special teams issues defensively. We didn't stop the run at times we needed to. We did recoup ourselves a little bit later defensively, but by then the offense was just doing nothing. They didn't establish the run. They didn't keep themselves within striking distance so the run could be a part of it. All those things. Now, there's no Gronk, we know that. The Trent Brown stuff, we've kind of covered that. Cannon's in and out of the game. The Dwayne Allen thing we mentioned. Unable to get White going, and I thought James White was a little bit surprised. I mean, usually he's the weapon that you just can't wait to unload on a team because you're not going to have a linebacker or even safety that's going to be able to cover this guy. They had a couple of incompletions go his way. They missed him on a handful of times where he's out in the flat or he's out in an angle route, and Brady's looking to Gordon on most of these, I believe. So they didn't send it his way on moments where I thought he had the separation and some space to work with to make bigger plays, and then did send it to him in more tight spots where even had he made those plays, there wasn't going to be a lot going on. It was like almost like sticks plays, like just trying to fit it in as if he were, you know, Julian or Amendola of old or something like that, just fitting it in right over the sticks and not really the catch-and-run situation. So it was a weird day for him. I kind of wonder if his ankle was still bothering him because we know he was in and out of the game a week ago, and if they had some issues with that, it's not something we can really know from the outside. But it was an outlier performance for James White, and Sony Michel thing just never got going. You hope that the offensive line recoups because I think we've seen those drives in the Bears game. We've seen those drives in the Chiefs games. We've seen those drives more recently where when they get Michel going, and this offensive line is the five that you know, Mason back, tackles healthy, that can walk down the field on just about anyone. But and when that run game is flying, they're extremely dangerous offense. When it's not, they're not. And that's just the NFL and NFL football. So I'm going to transition out of like super, super specific points of the Patriots and just go big picture, walking away, what needs to come out the other side of not just the bye week and those first few games, the kind of team they need to be to finish this thing off and enter into the playoffs. To me, it's a group that has to run the football. They have to. It has to be a part there. In those games where there's a complete absence of running the football, maybe you get away with it against the Jets. Maybe you get away with it again against the Bills. Maybe you get away with it in that second trip against the Dolphins. I don't know. They ran the ball against the Dolphins really well the first time around. But I don't think they can plan on going into the playoffs against some of the better teams and just not being able to run it or not attempting to run or putting themselves in the kind of hole that makes it hard to recommit to that. Running game has to be a part of it. And conversely, they got to be able to stop it. So if you want to play the game of what if and pair them against a particular possible playoff team, not stopping the run against John Connor. I don't care about, you know, Ben Roethlisberger and Antonio Brown. Not stopping the run against John Connor. I know that the table's been flipped on its back, and there's all sorts of new problems, and you're not going to beat that team. You're not going to beat them even in the regular season if that's the case. You need to stop those things first to keep the pinpricks in the dam from becoming manhole covers. So that's something that has to be an element. You have to be able to stop the run first. And it's easy for me to just say, stop the run first on a podcast. No, you have to play better at the tackle positions. Malcolm Brown has got to play better against the run. Danny Shelton is pretty consistent with that, but it wasn't his best game again last week or this Titans game. And Lawrence Guy, who's been tremendous throughout the year, actually lost on some run blocks yesterday, which I thought he had his first down performance that I recall. Even in the Detroit game where it looked like the other guys were having problems, Lawrence still played at a super high level. But this was one of the ones where, and he looked frustrated. He looked pissed, you know, on a few of those reaction to not getting off and making a play where we usually see him make it. So, you know, you have your best guys not playing well. And really in the middle of the defense, if they're not super strong and solid there, it really just, you know, again, the seams start to come apart in all sorts of other areas. So this has to be a team that can stop whatever run game is across from them from becoming just too overwhelming. If that's the case, yeah, then you start to nitpick about secondary issues and coverage issues with linebackers and whether or not they're pressuring stuff. But those things all are of secondary importance if you can't stop the run first. Mute that part. Mute that part for the Chiefs. Mute that part for the Steelers. Mute that part for some of these better teams. Maybe it's the Ravens. Maybe it's the Titans again. You know, you may see them in a first-round divisional game. Or, God willing, I'm knocking on wood here. Hopefully it's not a wild card game, but it could be. But you need to eliminate that portion first so that we can tell the rest of the story. If you don't, the story ain't going to be great. You're not going to like how it ends. So moving on here, and that's just, and then obviously this is just sort of an obvious point. You can't give up 10-plus yard returns play after play after play on punts, and you can't have kick returns and return to midfield. It's kind of basic. So special teams, it's been a somewhat down year for them because there's been three-ish pop performances by the other side. That doesn't mean they've been bad every week. They certainly haven't. It's easy to go out and find games. They played really well on special teams. But that's the life of a special teamer. You have a few bad performances, and that colors the 10. And that's just kind of how people consume it. So I'm maybe doing the exact same thing. Maybe I'm making the same mistake here. But you got to be cleaner throughout. You know, there cannot be – a big return needs to be one that just gets to the 30 on a kickoff. Now, those are the ones you need to be pissed about. Made it to the 30, damn it. They should be 25 or inside the 20 kind of stuff. But not the 50. That's off the board. You can't have those. If you have those, then you're a poor teams unit. And you never want to be known as that with as much talent and good leadership that they have in that group. And obviously the punting game needs to be there, especially, and you hope this isn't the case, but you hope they're not punting a lot. You know, hope that the offense isn't stalling, but in the moments you are, you can't be giving back the 10 plus punt returns. It's just, it can't happen. And I know people are hammering on this point about the home versus away stuff. Clearly the weeks where your special teams are worse can't be road ones, right? That just can't be the case because those are the times where you need to give a boost to the other two groups. If those things are sort of paired together, then you're in trouble. And that's just, again, it's not a Patriots point. That's going to go for everyone. But this is the thing I want you to take to sort of misremember, I think, the feel, the theme, the narrative that gets rolling out there, the things that people like to tweet and write and talk about that just aren't true. And it's this idea that, you need to see the Patriots do something now, because if they don't do it now, they'll not be able to do it then. I saw something on November blah, and because I saw that, I now know that they can't do it later. Well, it's historically incorrect with the Patriots themselves. I sort of jokingly referred to the Patriots winning their Super Bowl down, 28-3. Everyone knows that situation with the Atlanta game a couple years ago. But it's funny to me that, you could make the same kind of argument in that particular season that if, hey, that team at no point during the year, that you could call them front runners, I guess. You could say, hey, they led. They led and they buried teams, but in those couple games they lost, it was a 14-2 year. They got down. They didn't come back. So you could use that same antidote and say, well, this team, you get them down, they can't come back. There's nothing in the regular season to prove that they can come back from something like that. Well, they did, right? So something new happened in the playoffs because they were built a certain way. They were peaking at a certain time. They made the correct adjustments, and that particular game had enough health going for them, and they rose to the moment, made the play. So sometimes, a lot of times in the NFL, it's about rising to the moment. It's about performances. It's not about whether or not previous stats or previous rankings or something foretell that you can or can't do something later. And a lot of times this stuff doesn't happen at home. That's the next point here. I don't think people realize this, but the NFL winning percentage for home teams is only 64% in the NFL. So this, the idea, I think, that has grown in Patriots, and I think it grows out of more recent memory. It's not a sense of history. It's not looking back anything longer than the last few seasons, that the belief somehow is that if you're home, you can win. If you're not, you're going to lose and you're going to get out. Well, the rest of the league doesn't work that way. And it only because it's worked that a couple times that way more recently. I think some Patriots fans believe that's the only way it can possibly work. And that's nonsense. So you don't sort of extrapolate one thing and paint it over all the rest. And here, just looking, again, back to it, 64%. We're not talking 80. We're not even talking 85. We're talking 64, barely two-thirds. So a third of the time, one out of every three times you roll the dice, the road teams win in the playoffs. So, and it's not about which is the scarier place to go. If the Patriots are playing at a high level and the Chiefs are not, it won't matter where it's at. They could go win there, absolutely. What matters more is how they're playing, not where. And again, people say, oh, but remember the Denver game. Well, again, on that day, it was how they were playing. They couldn't protect. They couldn't protect at all. The offensive line was in shambles. Marcus Cannon was playing left with a jacked-up toe. They had guys out. There was no running game whatsoever to speak of there. You'll recall they were getting Steven Jackson, I believe, was running back at that time. He's just barely almost into retirement. No running game, not able to protect. That's the bigger story than the building. That's the bigger story. So as you look forward to this Patriots team, what they're going to be able to do, don't get caught up on what their record is. Don't get caught up on where the game's going to play. It's entertaining. It's maybe more, it's a helpful factor a little bit, but it's far inferior to the idea of how they're playing, who's healthy, what's left on the roster, how the matchup works, how they perform on that day. So here's some examples of this whole notion that you need to have a sterling record. And if the Patriots don't have a sterling record and don't have home playoffs, then, well, dang it, let's just stop being a Patriots fan through November and December. Let's just stop paying attention. That's ridiculous. And if you're a fan of any other team in this NFL, you can tell this to a Patriots fan that thinks that it's ridiculous. Even the Patriots themselves haven't had that be the case. Now, they're going to a younger Patriots fan, maybe a Patriots fan that's got a little myopia, one that doesn't look back too far and is only aware of anything that's only within the reach of their nose, they may think that, and that's possible. But I'll obviously point to the 0-1 group, the one that I was a part of, that we only went 11-5. And there's really not much indication of anything we did in the playoffs against a mobile quarterback like Cordell Stewart in the championship game. There's really no evidence of us holding down that kind or performing well against that kind of offense. We just rose up and did it on that day. Good game plan, good coaching, good performance. It worked. But there was certainly no indication in our 11-5 thing. We did get hot late, but we actually didn't get hot against that kind of team. It was a new challenge. We met it on that day. And that's kind of the fun part of sports. It's this idea that I think there's become this sort of perverse way of watching the Patriots that all that matters is some mid-season or in-season thing, and then you can either tune in or tune out about what the result of a game 2 months from then is going to come from what you saw earlier. That's insane. And that's, oh, it's over. It's done. Pack it up. Let's start thinking of the moving trucks, the Sox stuff in the spring. That's silly. And maybe it sounds like I'm telling you how to watch. I think if you're listening to the show, you probably don't consume it that way anyway. But I am, if for some reason you are one of the outliers who does it that way, I'm just trying to show that it's unhealthy because it ain't true. And we'll kind of walk through all the other examples that are non-Patriot ones that help you understand it. Especially if you say, hey, Matt, that's cool. That was in 01. It's 17 years later. That's not how things work in the NFL now. I can hear that. Well, let's walk through all of them, not just the one that I have, you know, some personal experience with. Now, going back to 88. Now, this is even longer, so you may even roll your eyes more at this one. But we'll work up to a bunch of current examples as we go through it. In 88, Niners were 10-6. 10-6. Do you know that when you point back to all these great Niner teams and, you know, Montana and Rice and all that stuff and sort of the amazing, all the rings they got and all the amazing performances they had, do you know that one of their championships is with a worse record than we even had with our 11-5? They had a championship with a 10-6 record. They had Montana and Rice. They were 6-5 at one point. Patriots are 7-3 right now. The Patriots are 7-3. The 88 Niners went 10-6 in the regular season. At a point, they were once 6-5, and they had the stars. And at one, and they blew Ruth right through the Vikes and Bears in the playoffs, and then they won a close one with the Bengals. You'll remember that year, but the notion that they needed to be Sterling, that you needed to have home field this and be that, it's not as relevant as peaking and playing better late. So I think if you're the Patriots, you want Tom Brady playing at his absolute level as you enter the playoffs. And how do you make that happen? Hopefully Gronk is healthy and back a part of it, so they're that much more diverse in the way they approach you, and they're running the football well. You buffer him with those two pieces, they're a team that's built to get hot. They're a team that can coach well, can game plan for a one-off really well. And if Gronk's playing at his old level and he's healthy then later, and Tom's back to having a complimentary group behind him, run the football and able to be a play-action guy and occasionally a hurry-up guy and then a two-minute guy and four-minute guy, well, they can kill anyone. And that's just what you have to hope for, not a perfect record and a home game. That's not it. Moving forward here, the 05 Steelers. So we're going to get to some more current stuff here to go through to sort of beat back this notion that you got to be 14-2 or 13-3 and have home field. And if you don't have those things, you're not winning Super Bowls. There's just so many examples in the recent past, even just the last 10 years, that this ain't the case. 15 here, 13 here, I guess. 05 Steelers, 11-5. They were 7-5 after week 12. 7-5. What'd they do? They went on and won the Super Bowl. Okay. 08 Giants. Not going to like that one, but you guys, obviously, Patriots fans understand what happened that 08 team with the Giants, but they were 10-6 regular season team, 10-6, and they won a Super Bowl. And we obviously know how they got it, and that's a sore spot, so I won't rest on that one too long. But the 2010 Packers, this is an interesting one to me. You think of the Aaron Rodgers Super Bowl, right? He did get his, and he was phenomenal, Sterling throughout that run. But that was a 10-6 team. That was not a 13-3 team. That was not a 14-2. It wasn't even not even a 12-4. That was a 10-6 regular season team that knocked the doors off the Falcons and the Super Bowl. And they didn't have home field throughout, and they didn't have this and that. They got hot, they were healthier, and they played at a high level down the stretch. Those are the things that matter. Moving on. And then that's 2010, so that ain't that far away. 2011, this is the Giants 9-7 team. They lost, and again, I understand who it is that they beat. This isn't that second meeting with the Giants with the Patriots in the Super Bowl, but remember, that was a 9-7 team. They lost four of their final eight, for fuck's sake. 4 of 8. That was a 9-7 team. Again, they didn't get rings because of the record they had in the regular season or some indication you learned about them in November or even December. Not at all the case of what was going on with that team and not at all the case of some earlier activity predicating what would happen later. You could not have played the game that way, the media game that way, that, well, we learned this about them in October, we learned this about them in November, and that told me they could or couldn't do this. Well, none of those things would have reached back. None of those things that they did accomplish in the run reached back to something prior. It isn't how it works more often than not. And here go 2012 Ravens. That's a 10-16. The Ravens, 10-6. 10-6 in 2012. Again, not that long ago. They lost 4 of 5 as they entered the playoffs. Entered the playoffs losing 4 of 5. They got beat twice in a row at home by 17 and 19 points. So again, if it's the, oh, this is how they're playing, this is how, you know, I learned that they're not that tough at this point, that they folded or something, that they got embarrassed in a home game late when teams are supposed to be peaking. Again, that stuff doesn't really marry up very well with how they then ran through the playoffs. Get healthier, get hot, perform better, one-off playoff game work where you game plan and execute well. That's what wins them. not some sort of lesson from mid or in season. And then finally, with the 2016 Broncos, now they had a much sexier regular season record. But if you wanted to play that whole game about learning about what an offense is and whether they're championship caliber, that was an atrocious offense. Peyton Manning was a shell of himself. And I like to sort of use this particular example because if we're getting into the sort of nitpicking of Brady's game part here where people want to have, cliff talk and all that kind of stuff and speak to the fact of how many touchdowns he's had in the last couple of weeks or something like that, and that's an indication of this, that, or the other. The way Tom Brady's playing now, even in the games that are supposedly not his – well, not supposedly, they weren't. It was against the Titans, he was not his sharp self. That's not the level you're used to seeing. But he was pretty good against Packers. So again, there's a key breaker or whatever just 7 days ago. So it's kind of silly to even talk about this. But people then reach back to the Bills game and say, didn't have any touchdowns in that game though, and the offense wasn't the best. Peyton Manning was a fraction of what Tom Brady is now, even when Tom's not playing at his top. And he got a ring, and they scored 24 points against a pretty good Panthers defense. Now, it wasn't because of explosive offense, but again, it does underscore the idea that you can get the ring without simply being perfect. And I think, again, people would maybe just sort of play devil's advocate on this point. Hey, the Broncos defense is playing just at an incredible level at that point. Well, there's plenty of opportunity between now and anything going on in January for the Patriots defense to come better and play at a high level. Maybe not that level, but I also don't think there's any way on God's green earth that Tom Brady's going to be playing at a level that Peyton Manning was there at the end of his career. Between now and really the next 2 or 3 years, it's just not. He's miles above where Peyton was. Peyton limped across the finish line in that one. It is what it is. Congrats, tip of the cap that he got the ring technically, but it wasn't great offense. He really struggled to throw the football, and they were able to win. So the point here is that there's contextual factors on all this stuff that are going to determine what happens later. It ain't from anything you learned against the Titans. It's just not. So there's going to be a long season to go here after they get back from the bye. Hopefully they've learned from it. Hopefully they improve. But let's not put too much stock in things that don't connect, because you can make them connect if you want to make yourself miserable. But again, to me, that's just more about needing to see something now to sort of calm some anxiety someone may have. It's not because it really actually connects. It's not because it really can't be changed, because they are changed. That's why you practice in the NFL. That's why performances are often so much different than now. The NFL is about playing well enough to survive in advance, to compile the wins, to hopefully get yourself that home field opportunity. But if you don't, doesn't matter if you don't perform on that day anyway. Go perform regardless of where the venue is. Win as many of these things as you possibly can. Win the matchup, game plan better, perform better down the stretch. Maybe I have a giant bias and a blind spot on this because we've won championships not at home a couple times. Been there in AFC Championship. Excuse me, well, not a couple that we were on the road, but winning an AFC Championship in Pittsburgh and being on a team that was 11-5 in the regular season, yeah, it's going to color my perception from now until the end of time. It can be done. We did it, right? And it's not that it was some sort of magical, only going to happen one kind of time, because no, it hasn't happened again for the Patriots. So just because it hasn't happened for the team you cheer for that path, you have to look and see, is it really that unusual with everyone else? And you look down here and say, oh, 05, 08, 10, 11, 12, 16. Oh, never mind. It happens a lot. It happens a lot where the teams aren't Sterling in the regular season and still turn it around. So don't need to cheer for Sterling now. Cheer for health. Cheer for learned lessons. Cheer for better play. Cheer for all the complementary parts to come together. That's the thing you need to have your eye on. That's the thing that'll help you get the hit. Focus on that. That this team can be something if they're doing those things. If they're not, this isn't meant to be some sort of sunshine show that's like, oh, everything's going to be fine, they'll be great. No, I mean, if they can't stop the run and they can't run the football later, no, then they won't win a championship. I think that's pretty easy to say. But nothing that just happened dictates that it will or won't later. That's just how it is. Anyway, thank you so much for listening to the Real Think Patriots podcast. I'm Matt Chatham. I know that you kind of look for this and look for me to do these shows to have them be a little bit therapeutic. I'm certainly not here to rub your shoulders and say, everything's okay. And no, if you play like they played against the Titans week in, week out, it won't be okay. But fortunately, when you're a 7-3 team, you clearly have gone out there several times without playing like that. So you need more of them down the stretch than the bad ones. But you've listened to the Real Thing Patriots podcast. You've come to pick up on a lot of these things and see it a little bit as I do. Thank you again for your listenership, and let's keep rolling through this thing through the rest of the year. This is the bye week. Kick back, relax, enjoy watching some of the other teams. You have the Rams and Chiefs playing one another, and sort of jokingly, but maybe not so jokingly, I might have to dig into storage and find some of my old Rams stuff. I don't know if people out there know this, but I was an undrafted free agent with the Rams, cut from that team, and came to New England in 2000. So that's how I started. So I got a nice little basket of old Rams stuff, the brighter yellow stuff from the old days, and maybe I have to throw that on. And I'm kidding, but cheer for those guys against the Chiefs, because the Chiefs travel out there to LA, and it would be helpful, clearly, for the Patriots if the home team thing means so much to you personally. It'd be a big opportunity for them to take a step back, because then the Chiefs still do have to face, I believe it's Seattle and the Chargers, who have been really a hang-up for them through their history. So they've got some challenges themselves. But again, my greater point here is don't hyper-focus on that. It's not the most important thing. Keep an eye on your team, that they do the things that they need to down the stretch to be the kind of team that can win later, regardless of where it's at. Again, Real Thing, Matt Chatham. Talk to you later. Bye now.
Thanks for listening to the Football by Football podcast. Football insight by football players.
Hi, Lucky. Night, Dusty.
Good night, Ned.
Good night, Ned.
Good night, Ned.